We are in Luke chapter 12 this morning, and thus far in this chapter, Jesus has been speaking to a multitude of people. He's been warning them of multiple things. He warned them of the hypocrisy of the Pharisees, of future judgment, of blaspheming the Holy Spirit, and that the disciples would be persecuted. All of those being very serious topics. And then, in verse 13, someone from the crowd interjected a completely unrelated topic. He said, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." That seems to come out of nowhere, doesn't it? It doesn't follow from anything Jesus had been speaking about. And the man wasn't asking Jesus a question. That might have made more sense. But no, he was commanding Jesus. Jesus was being commanded to settle a dispute between siblings. We saw something similar two Sundays ago with sisters Martha and Mary. Martha wanted Jesus to settle the issue that she had with Mary. And now this man wanted Jesus to settle an inheritance issue with his brother. Jesus' initial reaction could be read as frustration. Verse 14, he said to him, "Man, who has made me a judge or an arbitrator over you?" You can imagine Jesus being frustrated at this person for, you know, has he even been paying attention to what I've been teaching? Totally unrelated topic. On one hand, Jesus seemed to be saying, "I'm not going to do anything about your dispute. I'm not here to be a judge over inheritance squabbles. Go to someone else for that." But on the other hand, Jesus proceeded to give a moral injunction to the man. Verse 15, he said, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." Jesus said, "Man, who made me a judge over you?" But then he continued to address the man's issue. He didn't address the specifics of the dispute, but he addressed the foundational heart issue. Avoid covetousness. Don't be greedy. Don't be obsessed with the abundance of possessions. He'll even go on to give a parable about this. So it's not as if Jesus totally dismissed the man. As it turned out, Jesus was the judge of this man. Jesus is the ultimate judge. He is the ultimate teacher of the law. And so he addressed the ultimate issue with the man. The ultimate issue was the issue of his heart and his intentions. We don't know the details of this man or his brother or why he wanted half of the brother's inheritance. There's only so much that we can say. But given what Jesus says about coveting right after, and given the parallels between the man and Martha, I think it's clear that the man was in the wrong. He needed to hear this correction. He needed to hear Jesus' warning about covetousness. Jesus was pinpointing the true need. The man wanted to talk about a legal matter of inheritance. Jesus said, "No, let's talk about being greedy. How about we talk about that instead?" Jesus wasted no time in going straight to the heart. What the man presented to Jesus wasn't really the biggest problem. The biggest problem was the temptation to sin. The temptation to covet. As you should all know, the command to not covet is the 10th of the 10 commandments. Exodus 20, 17 says, "You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his male servant, nor his female servant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor anything that is your neighbor's." And anything would include inheritance money, right? Well, what does it mean to covet? The word itself just means to desire something, which isn't always wrong. We desire things every day, but what the Bible forbids is desiring something that is off limits to you. Desiring something that is off limits to you. That's what we mean by coveting. For example, your neighbor's wife is off limits to you because she is not yours to have. She has not been given to you. She is not available to you. She is off limits to you. Wives are not commodities that can be traded. So you shouldn't even desire someone else's wife. That would be a sinful desire, sinful coveting. This is different from desiring something that is available to you, something that can be traded. For example, when you see a house for sale, it's okay to desire the house, even though someone else owns it at that point. It's okay, though, because they are offering it to you. They are saying, hey, my house is available to you. Give me the money and it's yours. So, if you desire the house, that is not a sinful desire. Now, for whatever reason, the man in our text desired half of his brother's inheritance. But if the brother hadn't offered that, if he hadn't agreed to it, then the inheritance was off limits to the man. It was not available to him, yet he continued to desire it and plot after it. He tried using Jesus to force the brother. That was sinful. That is the coveting that the Bible forbids. Jesus said, "One's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." Possessions are good, and even an abundance of possessions can be good. They are to be acquired in the proper way, received with a thankful heart, and then used and enjoyed rightly. Righteously, I should say. Enjoyed righteously. But an abundance of possessions is not the key to your happiness. It's not what gives your life purpose or meaning or value. Possessions come and go. They're here today and gone tomorrow. They can be taken away, and even your life, your very life, can be taken away at any moment. In verses 16 through 20, Jesus went on to give a parable about a rich man and his land. The land of a rich man had produced plentifully. He had so many crops that he had nowhere to store them. So what did he do? He tore down his existing barns to build the bigger ones, to build bigger ones, and to have enough room. And so far, that plan is not a problem. So far, so good. If that's what he wants to do, go for it. But when he built the bigger barns and had enough room, that's what he started putting his security in. All of his stuff was nicely stored and protected. He said, hey, I'm good. I am set for years. I don't have to worry about anything because I have all of these possessions hoarded up. I'm going to eat, drink, and be merry. But God came to him and said, verse 20, you fool. This night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? This night your soul will be required of you. That means the man was going to die. The man was going to die. And when he dies, he will not have those possessions anymore. They will be given to someone else entirely. Jesus was referring here to the vaporous nature of life. The vaporous nature of life. The book of Ecclesiastes is one of the wisdom books written by Solomon. And a major theme of Ecclesiastes is that all of life is a vapor. Now, most English translations get this wrong. They will say that life is vanity or meaningless. And that creates a lot of confusion when people read it. What? Life is meaningless? That doesn't sound very Christian. But the Hebrew word literally means a vapor or a mist, something that evaporates, something that cannot be held onto. That's what the word means. Ecclesiastes shows that that is how we experience the world. And God has ordained it to be that way. We read from Ecclesiastes 2 earlier, where Solomon lamented that a man's work is eventually passed on to someone else. And you don't know how your life's work, the things that you labored for, you don't know how they're going to be treated once you're gone. Will they be cherished and remembered, or will they be disregarded and forgotten? You don't know. Think of inheritances and heirlooms, things like that. You can save stuff to pass on to your family, but once you're gone, you don't know if they'll be kept or not. Solomon says this is vapor. This is vapor. Because life is vaporous, and because God has made it that way, we can actually find joy and rest and comfort in it. That is the message of Ecclesiastes. If you know that life is vaporous, and you know that God is in control of the future, the best thing you can do is eat, drink, and find enjoyment in your work right now, today. That is the best thing for you to do. Your faith and security should always be in God. You cannot put your faith in the things that you own, nor in your legacy. As far as you know, you won't even have a legacy. That's something we all need to come to terms with. Think about how quickly people are forgotten once they die. In a few short generations after our deaths, most of us will not be remembered by society. So what can you do? What else can you do but put your faith in God? You trust Him with your possessions and your work, and you relax. Trust Him and relax. That is when you can eat, drink, and be merry. The problem with the rich man in the parable was that he wasn't trusting God. He put his faith in the possessions that he owned. He was not considering the vaporous nature of life. He wasn't considering the vaporous nature of his own life, his death. His security was in his riches, and he wanted to eat, drink, and be merry without giving any thought to God. That type of merriment is sinful. The man put his faith in his riches, acting as if life wasn't vaporous. And it resulted in his judgment. It resulted in his judgment. So it is for he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God, Jesus says. That's a warning to all of us to not be like the rich man, or else we will suffer the same fate. The parable also served as a warning to the people of Israel corporately in the first century, to Jesus' original audience. Issues of inheritance and land were very important to the Jewish people. Families clung to their land for religious reasons, not just economic. The land was a promise from God going all the way back to Abraham. And so it was very important in their thinking. But Israel had become like the rich man. Their security was in the land and inheritances and in their family heritage, not in God or his Messiah. God was coming in judgment against them, and they were oblivious to it. Israel had become the fool. As the church, we need to be on guard that we do not become like unfaithful Israel. We need to remember where our blessings come from, and that can be hard sometimes as consumeristic, materialistic Americans. But when God blesses the church when God blesses the church with nice things, influence, money, buildings. We cannot become proud. He gives and he can take away. Our priority is to be rich toward God. And we cannot become envious when other Christians or churches have nicer things than we do. Every blessing that God gives is grace. Nothing is owed to us. We need to know that all of the activities we do, the things we plan, the ways we serve, it is all vapor. It is all vapor. That is how God has set it up. It is intentional on God's part. And it takes maturity to acknowledge that. It takes maturity to acknowledge that life is a vapor. But once you do, that is when you can find joy in it. That is when you can trust God most fully. Put in the effort and put in a hard day's work, whether that's at your job, at school, or in the home. But leave the results to God. Eat, drink, and be merry. He wants you to do that by faith. If you do have a problem with coveting, how should you handle that? We read from Colossians 3 earlier, and it said that covetousness is a form of idolatry. When you covet something, when you covet the abundance of possessions, you turn those things into idols. You give them a priority and a devotion that only God should receive. So, this is a big deal. We need to treat our possessions as gifts from God, not as idols that replace God. Coveting is a problem in our culture. People frequently desire things that are off limits to them, and they become envious of others. They plot to get them, even by using force of various kinds, kind of like the man in our text, kind of like Martha. They both wanted to use Jesus for their selfish gain. People covet their neighbor's spouse, their neighbor's money, their house, their cars, you name it. We covet reputation, authority, popularity. There are many ways that this applies to us, and we need to pay attention. The remedy for covetousness is twofold. First, you must be content with what you have. You must be content with what you have. Be content with what God has blessed you with right now, today. Even if nicer things are not available to you, be grateful for what you do have. And if you struggle with that, you need to pray. You need to pray for God to give you gratitude. Pray for Him to give you gratitude. Just start thanking Him for the things that you have. And that is going to change you. That's going to change your heart and change your disposition and change how you think about the things that you own. Pray that God would give you the right perspective. Yes, your situation could always be better, but it could always be a heck of a whole lot worse. And that is something that we need to be mindful of. If nicer things come around, great. Thank God for them and be content with those things as well. Always be ready to receive God's gifts, but know that they're likely not going to be identical to your neighbors. They will not always be identical to your neighbors. And secondly, be happy for your neighbor. Be happy for your neighbor. Don't be envious of your neighbor and the things that he has. Be happy for him. Be happy that God has blessed him with a beautiful wife. Be happy that God blessed them with the house and the car and whatever else. Be happy that they have all of their nice things. Rejoice with them and pray for them. Pray that they would give gratitude for those things. Pray that God would continue to bless them. Pray that they would receive those gifts with gratitude. Don't be like the man in the crowd, and don't be like the rich man in the parable. count Jesus as your greatest possession. Worship him, not the idols. And follow Jesus' example when it comes to possessions. Was Jesus greedy with his possessions? No. Jesus gave up his possessions. He gave up his very life. He gave it up to give himself to you. And he was raised in an immortal body. Think about that. Jesus now lives forevermore. He is the one possession of yours that is not a vapor. He is the one possession that is not a vapor. Jesus cannot fade away. He will not die again. He will never decay. Life is a vapor, but Jesus isn't. So eat, drink, and be merry with faith in him.